Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to 6370. So this is an elementary but modern introduction to Piatek Hodge theory. It's pitched at a little bit of a funny level. So I just wanted to sort of say a couple things about that first. I mean, we're going to essentially start from scratch. We're going to construct the Piatek numbers. We're not going to assume sort of anything beyond like basic abstract algebra at the graduate level. So those are like rings, Galois theory, but we're not going to sort of assume a background in algebraic number theory. So it's in that sense, it's an elementary course because we're not going to require that background. And it is an algebraic number theory course because 6370 is algebraic number theory, but we are going to sort of eschew the standard syllabus of an algebraic number theory course, which would cover fields like the rational numbers, number fields, factorization of prime ideals, and more classical topics like this. So we're going to sort of ignore everything essentially about global fields, number fields, and we're only going to study sort of the Piatek numbers and maybe more generally some other local fields. If that's something you're interested in, sort of maybe when you signed up for this class, if you signed up for it, you thought that's what you were signing up for. There are plenty of excellent resources online. For example, like Milne's algebraic number theory notes are perfectly acceptable. But if anyone sort of was looking for that and has questions about where to find that, let me know. I'm going to talk today just about motivation. So probably today and probably next time. Just motivation, sort of framing sort of what is Piatek-Hodge theory, sort of how it sits in relation to Hodge theory and sort of some other topics in number theory and algebraic geometry. I'm going to pitch this motivational material at a bit of a higher level than the rest of the class. For example, I'm going to talk about algebraic varieties and sort of cohomology and things like this without sort of saying too much about definitions or anything. I'll be assuming some background in geometry and topology for the motivation. If you don't have that background, sort of just hold tight and try and get what you can out of it. You can always sort of revisit this lecture sort of at the end of the class. I'm also sort of going to be sort of fairly fuzzy anyway. So sort of if you have at least some vague notions, you can probably still I guess there's something interesting out of it. So let's start by talking about Hodge theory. So Hodge theory, this is a subject in complex algebraic geometry. So this is sort of, in one way to think about it is the study of sort of extra structure on the cohomology of complex algebraic varieties. Hodge theory sort of has sort of both an algebraic flavor and an analytic flavor. You can do everything purely analytically in the category of complex Kähler manifolds. So that's sort of an analytic notion, which is sort of both more and less general than complex algebraic varieties. All smooth complex algebraic varieties, or all smooth quasi-projective complex algebraic varieties, are Kähler manifolds. Hodge theory also applies to singular algebraic varieties, and there are Kähler manifolds which are not sort of algebraic varieties. The difference is just sort of an algebraic variety is something that can sort of be cut out using polynomial equations, and sort of a general complex manifold is something that can be cut out sort of using sort of analytic functions. So sort of the algebraic versus analytic issue, but sort of for the like the main example, sort of the main interesting examples in analytic geometry, an analytic geometer would disagree, but come from things living inside a projective space. And so you can already show that if you have something living inside of a projective space, then if it's cut out by analytic functions, it's actually cut out by algebraic functions. So sort of algebraic in the world of complex geometry, requiring sort of looking at algebraic varieties instead of analytic varieties is sort of not so big a restriction anyway. Okay, but so what do I mean by sort of extra structure on the cohomology of algebraic varieties? So let me do an example. I'll do sort of two examples, and then I'll sort of talk about what's happening in them. So the first examples I'm going to look at, so C star, so this is the punctured complex plane. So this is, remove zero from the complex plane. So this is in a complex analytic manifold, is also an algebraic variety. But sort of just a topological space. So this is sort of homotopic to a circle around the origin. And so its first homology group is sort of just generated. So its first homology group with Z coefficients. For those who don't know, homology is sort of just some linear algebraic invariant you attach to topological spaces and manifolds. So this here, I mean singular homology for the sort of those who know different word, different flavors. So if you do it by sort of thinking about, so H1 sort of is just, you think about the different ways you can embed curves, then you sort of model by sort of when you can deform one to another, and then you sort of force everything to be abelian. You sort of essentially only look at things you can see sort of by, yeah, another way to think about it is sort of you only look at things you can see sort of by integrating differential forms. So in fact, we're going to do that. So this is equal to Z times the class, so gamma. So gamma is just so the counterclockwise circle living inside of C star. So this is, so when I put brackets around it, that means take the homology class, and that's sort of just, and then so sort of the homology group of C star is generated by this class. Okay. That's sort of singular cohomology is sort of one notion of homology or cohomology for a manifold, but you can also use Durham cohomology. So you can also sort of compute these invariants using differential forms. So when you look at the differential form, dz over z, so this is a holomorphic differential form even. If I integrate over gamma, this differential form, well, I get 2 pi I. And the reason I get 2 pi I is because sort of a local antiderivative is the log of z. Okay. Log of z is not defined on this domain, but sort of locally it's defined. So I can sort of use that to compute. I can use that to compute this integral. So this is sort of just, and this is sort of the fundamental computation in complex analysis that sort of when you integrate dz over z around a puncture, you get 2 pi I. So this is sort of where like the whole theory of residues comes from, for example. So that's first example, and I'll say back a little bit more. Let me say a little bit more now, and then I'll go to the next one. So one way we can think of this is sort of this class dz over z sort of represents an element in the cohomology group. So the cohomology is sort of the dual theory to homology. And so this is an H1, this manifold C star with now complex coefficients. So here we have sort of the space And whenever I write sort of cohomology, sort of first term is the space, second term is the coefficients. And here, this just means, this is, it doesn't mean this, but sort of it's equivalent to saying HOMS. So just maps from the first homology group to the complex numbers. And so this is determined just by its value on my generator gamma. And so this is equal to 2 pi I times Z. Is equal to C. So I just have to say where gamma goes, and sort of DZ over Z maps to the number sort of 2 pi I inside of here. So when here, when I say this is sort of isomorphic to C, I'm using my fixed generator for the homology group. So I sort of just saying where that generator goes. So this this homology class, this circle, is detected by this differential form. So if you have sort of these two different invariants of of a complex algebraic variety or a complex manifold, sort of one is Durham cohomology, one is singular cohomology, but they're sort of related by the fact that you can integrate differential forms around around cycles. Okay, around chains. Okay, so that was the first example. The second example, we're going to fix a number tau containing the complex numbers, but not in the real numbers. So I'm going to look at, for example, tau to be like a third root of unity. And you don't have to take that, you can take any tau in here. And then I'm going to look at e tau. So this is going to be the complex numbers. Well, the complex numbers are both a manifold and a group, and I can sort of mod out by the subgroup generated by 1 and tau. So if I think about this, so here's sort of 1, here's what number did I take over here? So here's tau. And so I sort of, this is sort of a fundamental domain for this space. And sort of everything I can sort of translate back into this. And so what this looks like is that sort of I've glued these edges and I've glued these edges. So when I glue those edges, I get just sort of topologically and even sort of diffeomorphically. So diffeomorphism sort of is equivalent just as real manifolds. I get just a product of two circles. So I'm just getting a torus. I might do this. And so, and what are my my first homology group then? Sort of is just sort of generated by sort of two embedded circles. So H1 of E tau. Z coefficients, so this is equal to just Z times gamma 1 plus, so I'll write down, plus Z times gamma tau. So gamma 1, so it just parameterizes the line segment from, so here was 0, from 0 to 1. So this guy up here. And so you parameterize that line saying to 0 to 1, which sort of when you then sort of quotient out becomes just a circle inside your elliptic curve. So maybe sort of here if we write 0, then how did I draw this? Probably this would make most sense to write this. This is sort of gamma 1. And gamma tau parameterizes the line segment from 0 to tau. Okay, so here's 0 again, and I am going to get my orientation right? So just go around sort of this way, I think. I'm not good at spatial reasoning, and I think that's okay. Okay, so this is, these are sort of, these generate the homology group. So I can think of it sort of as just being Z squared with these two generators. I can also sort of fix a basis for the Derham cohomology. So I haven't said what the Derham cohomology is, but sort of maybe you already know. And if you don't know, then sort of you can just sort of, then it doesn't matter. Just sort of, I'll do a computation and sort of you can sort of believe this does something interesting. So here we have sort of the Derham cohomology is sort of also two-dimensional. It's generated by differential form dz and dz bar. So z bar is complex conjugate. So, and remember, sort of Derham cohomology is sort of something sort of defined for a real manifold. So sort of when we sort of, so this is sort of really dx plus I dy, so dx minus I dy, for z is equal to x plus iy. As a complex manifold, sort of it's two-dimensional and sort of with local coordinates, sort of x and y. As a real manifold, sorry, the complex numbers as a real manifold, sort of is two-dimensional with local coordinates x and y. And so when I sort of write z, sort of it's a function, sort of it's a complex valued function on this real manifold, sort of which is just equal to x plus iy. And so dz is sort of dx plus I times dy. So here I'm doing Derham cohomology with complex coefficients. So this gives me a basis and sort of now I can integrate around these paths and get elements in. So integrating these classes gives elements in the first cohomology, complex coefficients, which again is just homomorphisms from first homology to the complex numbers. So integration of dz goes to, well, just in sort of the dual basis for it, so the basis I fixed above, the first one is just what happens when I integrate along gamma 1. Well, how does z change as I go from 0 to 1? Goes from 0 to 1, so changes by 1. And then how does z change as I go from 0 to tau? Well, just goes from 0 to tau. And the function z doesn't descend to a function on this elliptic curve, but the differential form dz does descend to a function on this elliptic curve. So elliptic curve, E stands for elliptic curve. This is secretly an elliptic curve. I'll come back to that in a minute. And then integration dz bar, this goes to 1 tau bar. Okay, so this is another example. So we can, and again, so you can detect in the, so cohomology is sort of about somehow detecting the something about the topology of your space. And so you can write it down sort of by either looking at sort of paths in the space, or it turns out by also sort of, you can detect it by just looking at differential forms on the space. And sort of these are related because you can integrate differential forms along paths or sort of higher cycles. So these are related by integration. The point of Hodge theory, or sort of maybe the origin of Hodge theory, is sort of remembering the relation between singular. So singular is sort of this thing of paths, and Derham. So Derham is this thing with differential forms, paths, cycles, chains, I should say, if I say cycles, that's going to get confusing later. Those are differential forms. Cohomology actually sort of gives more information than just remembering sort of one or the other, than sort of just remembering sort of one or the other plus the fact that they're isomorphic. So really what I mean, so you have these two things, and sort of like, if you just remember the fact that they're isomorphic, essentially all you get is sort of like the dimension of these things. Like that's sort of the only information that's contained. But sort of they're not just sort of abstractly isomorphic, sort of like this thing you compute with differential forms and this thing you can compute sort of with these paths and cycles on your manifold. They're not abstractly isomorphic, they're sort of concretely isomorphic because we really have sort of an explicit isomorphism sort of given by integration. So, and this is sort of a general theme in mathematical life, if you have an explicit isomorphism between two things, like that explicit isomorphism is more information than just sort of knowing abstractly that those two things are isomorphic. Okay, and so here sort of this really matters. How do you encode the extra information you get? Depending on your setup, there are different things you could do, but sort of here in this Hodge theory setup, what you do is you sort of record, sort of you combine what's special about the two theories. So sort of singular cohomology, sort of what's special about this, that sort of you don't have for Durham cohomology is, special, yeah, so. Let me sort of be precise, so here I have singular cohomology with complex coefficients of some complex variety, and then sort of I've said this is isomorphic by integration. With the Durham cohomology with complex coefficients. And so what's special about singular cohomology, about sort of is that sort of it has sort of an integral lattice inside of it. So you can define singular cohomology not just with complex coefficients, but with integral coefficients. This sort of gives you, and up to sort of forgetting about torsion, this is some lattice inside. It turns out sort of what's special about Durham cohomology so here I'm writing H1 everywhere, but sort of may as well have sort of written higher HIs, so higher cohomology groups, which you'd see sort of for higher dimensional things. So this special about Durham cohomology is you have a sort of natural filtration on it. So called the Hodge filtration. And essentially this is coming from sort of from holomorphic differential forms. So, so PEEF filtration of the of the Durham cohomology of X. So these are classes. So represented by sort of differential forms with sort of at least P holomorphic variables. And so just to sort of be absolutely concrete, and if anyway, if this is sort of foreign to you, then sort of it's not so important how to be concrete, but sort of for those who have a little bit of familiarity with this, I'm gonna be a little bit more concrete and say so, and I'll come back and then say what this means in the example above. So i.e., if sort of Z1 through Zm are local holomorphic coordinates, then, well, we have Z1, Z1 bar, Z2, Z2 bar, or so on, our local sort of manifold coordinates. So real manifold coordinates. Sort of in a precise sense. And so that sort of is not, maybe not quite obvious from what I've written. And then sort of you can look at, but anyway, you can sort of differential forms can all be expressed as sort of something times wedges, sums of something times wedges of sort of variables DZI and sort of DZI J bar. And so sort of when fill P is sort of things like, well, sorry, let me just do an example. Like fill two would be like things like DZ1, wedge DZ2, wedge DZ3 bar times sort of F. Where F is sort of not necessarily a holomorphic function, so F is just sort of a smooth function. So the point is sort of how many holomorphic variables you have appearing in your wedge. And sort of, then you can sort of take sums of these things. But sort of, so when you're looking at this PEEF filtration, you're looking at things that sort of locally have an expression sort of where the wedge that's happening sort of has P holomorphic variables. There are different ways to think about the Hodge filtration. But this is sort of the most concrete way to think about it. Okay. So first, before I answer your question, let me just point out the way I'm recording this, I'm going to not upload other people's audio. I'll only upload my audio. So when someone asks me a question, I'm going to try and repeat that question. So the question that was just asked was essentially sort of, is there some more sheaf theoretic local expression of this? And the answer is yes. So sort of sheaf theoretically, it turns out you can, I'm going to say an answer that assumes you know some sheaf theory. So sheaf theoretically, you can sort of compute Durham cohomology as the hypercohomology of the complex of holomorphic differentials. And then you can sort of take sort of the naive filtration on that complex, and that sort of gives you the Hodge filtration. Sort of if you then sort of spell out sort of what that means in terms of sort of why is there a quasi-isomorphism of this complex and sort of the regular Durham complex and sort of why can you use this to compute? And if you sort of spell out what this means, then sort of this other definition will pop out sort of more or less explicitly. Okay, but sort of, and for people who sort of aren't sort of familiar with sheaf theory, that sort of, that's fine. We're not going to use much sheaf theory after today or even sort of the rest of the day. So that's what was special about Durham cohomology. So for a complex analytic manifold, you have this filtration on it. And then sort of what's special when you combine the two is you get sort of both a lattice and a filtration. So this is sort of what a Hodge structure is. So a Hodge structure is a Z module. So you should think of this as being singular cohomology. Plus a filtration on sort of we call them Z module M, plus a filtration on sort of M tensor C. So that's what a Hodge structure is, plus some axioms, sort of relating the filtration to its conjugate, which, depending on your perspective, are or sort of are not fundamental to the theory. In the perspective, we'll eventually look at sort of these axioms are actually maybe not so fundamental to the theory. If you're a classical algebraic geometer, these axioms are fundamental to the theory because there are sort of axioms that are satisfied whenever you have sort of the Hodge structure coming from a complex algebraic variety. Okay. And there are axioms that sort of guarantee that this thing is related to other nice invariants sort of your manifold, of your complex algebraic variety, for example. I guess I should say sort of complex algebraic varieties also sort of have another thing called a polarization on their Hodge structure. But we're not going to, again, sort of later on from our perspective, that won't be sort of something that always exists in our world. So sort of it's not sort of as important to highlight here. Okay. But so the main thing I want you to take away is sort of the cohomology of a complex algebraic variety is equipped sort of, it's not just sort of a vector space or a Z module. It's really sort of what you get is a Z module and a sort of complex filtration on that Z module. And so together, this is actually more information. So example one above is not so interesting, but sort of in example two above. So our Z module sort of was just Z squared. So this is sort of the H1 E tau. So this thing we got by sort of taking a complex plane and modding out by this lattice generated by one and tau. And this is, I'm going to take H1. So this is just sort of the dual Z module to, since there's no torsion, this is the dual module to sort of H lower one. And so sort of when I say Z squared, sort of the first basis vector is sort of just the, like the two basis vectors are just the dual basis for this. So I'm using the dual basis for the paths gamma one, gamma tau, and then sort of the filtration on Z squared tensor C is, well, sort of the only sort of non-trivial thing is sort of what is sort of the first step in the filtration, just because sort of everything is, like everything is represented by a cohomology class that has at least zero holomorphic parts. And sort of nothing in H1 is represented by a cohomology class that's sort of by a differential form that has more than two holomorphic parts, because sort of you're only looking at one forms. So sort of the only interesting thing is what sort of the first step of the filtration is. And this is sort of generated by dz. So dz is this holomorphic differential, or sorry, yeah, dz, which in this basis we computed was given by just, so it sends gamma one to one and gamma tau to tau. So here this means the line spanned by this vector one tau. Okay, and so makes a remark. Let me make a sort of ambiguous statement. So for most choices of tau, and tau prime. E tau is not isomorphic to E tau prime as a sort of complex manifold or as a complex variety. But in E tau is always sort of diffeomorphic to sort of just product two circles. Also diffeomorphic to E tau prime. So sort of in all of these have the same sort of diffeomorphic. So all of these sort of different E tau, like these different complex manifolds, they all have the same sort of underlying real manifold. But sort of as complex manifolds, they really are distinct. And so this is exactly detected by the Hodge structure. So actually sort of taking this Hodge structure on the first cohomology group in this case, so taking the Hodge structure on the first cohomology in this case, like really detects which one you have. So sort of another way to say it, sort of sending some of these E tau to its Hodge structure, sort of, what turns out sort of even be fully faithful if you sort of define sort of a notion of morphism between these things. Whereas sort of if you didn't remember the Hodge structure, if you just remembered the cohomology groups, and even sort of some of the cohomology groups are sort of real manifolds, but sort of real manifolds you sort of wouldn't have this filtration under Raam cohomology. Then you sort of wouldn't get any information distinguishing these apart because they're the same. They're sort of diffeomorphic. So somehow this really is a finer invariant that exists for complex algebraic varieties and really detects something about sort of the like it exists for complex manifolds and really detects something about the complex structure. You can't see without sort of considering this extra information. So the situation sort of is not sort of this nice in general. It's not like sort of if you have two algebraic varieties with the same Hodge structures, then on their sort of on their cohomology groups, that those two algebraic varieties are sort of the isomorphic as algebraic varieties. And that's definitely not true. But sort of in, like, for example, for curves, it is true. And sort of it's, so somehow it's still, it always encodes, in many cases encodes sort of lots of interesting information, sort of in a way that you can sort of make precise, at least sort of conjecturally. So Hodge structures really detect sort of interesting information. And that's why we use them. So that's why if you do algebraic geometry, if you do complex algebraic geometry, sort of when you talk about the cohomology, like you don't, like you talk about the cohomology as a Hodge structure. So you never sort of throw away this filtration and sort of just look at singular cohomology, because sort of doing so would be sort of throwing away this sort of vast amount of often geometric information about your thing and sort of aim. Just sort of in math in general, sort of in what do we understand linear algebra and nothing else. So sort of every time we work on something else, we try to sort of linearize that data until we can study it with linear algebra. Like a sort of Z module with a filtration on it, like that is sort of something you can study with linear algebra. An algebraic variety is sort of a priori, or at least a priori not. Somehow. My goal in life is sort of always to reduce to a linear algebra problem anyway. Okay, so let me just sort of maybe state just an example, sort of what you can do with Hodge structures, sort of. So you can use So the Hodge conjecture, so you can sort of detect sort of cohomology classes represented by algebraic varieties. Let me say homology classes. Using Hodge structures. So let me just sort of scroll up and sort of tell you what I mean by that. I mean, so like if you look at this picture, so these, like, I mean, so you look at this picture of sort of this elliptic curve. Well, the homology classes on the torus are detected using circles. Circles are sort of one-dimensional real manifolds. Every algebraic variety is sort of two-dimensional as an algebra, sort of as a real manifold. So definitely, like, these circles are not sort of algebraic subvarieties. So these circles sort of represent the homology classes, but they are not algebraic subvarieties. They represent the homology classes. And so sort of turns out sort of one fundamental question in algebraic geometry is sort of to understand which cohomology classes are represented by algebraic varieties and sort of when you should expect to sort of have this. And so the Hodge conjecture sort of gives a precise sort of expectation in terms of the Hodge structure for when this should be. Based on the example I did, you could say, you could sort of suppose that maybe every two-dimensional, like every even-dimensional cohomology class was represented by a complex algebraic variety, but sort of, that's also not true. There really is sort of some heavy restriction. Fairly easily give a sort of a necessary condition, and then the Hodge conjecture says it's sort of a sufficient condition. And if you could solve the Hodge conjecture, well, there's a lot you could do with it. This is probably worth $1 million. If it's not worth $1 million, it's certainly worth a Fields Medal. And so the Hodge conjecture is sort of one of the major unsolved conjectures in mathematics. And anyway, this is what it's about. It's about sort of being able to use linear algebra to understand some hard problem about algebraic varieties. Okay. So that was a little bit about Hodge theory. I want to sort of still do Hodge theory, but sort of step back a little bit and think about it in sort of a slightly sort of more mystical way that we can sort of then sort of transport our mystical thinking sort of slowly over to the p-adic numbers. I want to talk about motives for a moment. And I think motives can be a scary word, sort of depending on what you know or don't know about it. Motives sort of can be made precise in different ways, and sort of maybe you know some of those ways, so feel free to sort of make this notion precise in your own head if you'd like. I am going to be sort of very wishy-washy about sort of what motives are. The idea is sort of, going back to Grothendieck, sort of you can sort of, if you sort of, let me say, linearize algebraic varieties. So now I'm sort of over just some field K. So an algebraic variety over field K, it's something that looks like the theory of complex algebra, like the theory of algebraic varieties over field K is sort of, you take the theory of complex algebraic varieties and then sort of you figure out a way to make sense of it without sort of having sort of the nice underlying topological spaces that you have sort of over the complex numbers. But sort of it's still sort of this notion of sort of these things you can build sort of out of sort of like zero sets of polynomials. And so that's what a complex algebraic variety is, or that's what an algebraic variety over a general field K is. Linearizing is sort of some very nebulous term, but what I essentially mean is sort of you sort of take some category and sort of that's not sort of linear and you sort of turn it into something you can study with linear algebra. And so there are different ways you can do that. And so here I have a specific one in mind that I'm not going to say, but sort of this has something to do with this this linearization here has something to do with cohomology classes represented by algebraic varieties. So the idea is that if you linearize algebraic varieties over field K, then they sort of break down into sort of these elemental chunks called motives. So I like chunks because sort of it's a hefty word, and so motives, I think, sort of a hefty thing. So you should think they have some real weight to them. Pun intended. Which somehow they sort of encode sort of fundamental geometric and arithmetic information. Let me make those two words precise. So geometric means sort of essentially something over an algebraically closed field. And so arithmetic means sort of something over a non-algebraically closed field. So for example, like if you look at varieties over the rational numbers, you could always sort of take your varieties, you take those polynomial equations and then sort of just treat them as like equations with coefficients in the complex numbers. And now it's sort of, you're really just sort of working in a purely geometric setting. But some of the fact that you had some equations over the rational numbers to begin with, like gives you some extra information. And sort of that sort of the information that's remembered after you sort of go to the complex numbers, that's sort of geometric information. There's sort of the difference between that geometric information and sort of what you actually have is sort of arithmetic. Sort of what I mean there. Okay, so sort of in the motive sort of remembers both. Let me just say sort of, this is a little bit, and again, I'm being very vague, but sort of this is a little bit like sort of taking a taking G a finite group, X to be a finite G set. I just mean a set with an action of G. And so that's not like finite G sets, sort of this is some simple geometric, like this is sort of geometric things, like sort of a set is sort of just a discrete set of points. And sort of saying you have an action of G on this, sort of some extra information, but this is sort of a geometric thing. It's not not a linear thing. But then you sort of linearize by taking sort of just functions on X, say to the complex numbers. So now this is, these functions have an action of G, and then you can sort of decompose into sort of irreducible representations for G. I mean, like somehow this, in this example is sort of, you know, it's a good thing to sort of keep in mind sort of how sort of things can break up into sort of further chunks once you sort of linearize. Like for example, like e.g., so I take, well, z to be my group G, which is not finite, but that's fine. I'll just let it act on a finite set. So it acts on sort of z mod nz. So this is sort of irreducible as a sort of Z set, but sort of maps X to C sort of breaks up as into sort of the N characters, so N one-dimensional subspaces. Sub-representations. So this, according to the characters, so a character is the one-dimensional representation of a group. One goes to either 2 pi I k over n, k 0 to n minus 1. These are also like these functions sort of span the character spaces, both characters and span character spaces. So sort of you have this thing that's irreducible, but when you linearize it, sort of it actually breaks up into sort of n distinct chunks. This is a motive, and sort of this is sort of like this is now you can sort of set yourself up so that this thing is an algebraic variety, and then this sort of these chunks are sort of the motives living inside of it that it breaks up into. So sort of by working sort of with zero dimensional algebraic varieties. So this example actually sort of is sort of a strict subset, but then it's not sort of it's not a very representative example. It's just sort of supposed to be more representative of the like of the idea that sort of you can linearize a category and then sort of break up into sort of further chunks after you linearize. Okay, so that's sort of first thing. So these chunks, and they're sort of, let's say you can sort of be seen in cohomology. So that can be made more precise in sort of specific examples. So the point being, because cohomology itself is a linearization, so sort of like motives are sort of the like the idea of motives is sort of like the minimal linearization through which like all cohomological sort of linearizations factor. But so these chunks can be sort of seen in cohomology, and sort of they sort of move around from standard using standard operations. So for example, so we have this thing we studied before, this punctured complex plane. We can sort of see it as living inside of P1. So it's sort of P1 when I remove, so P1 is a projective line, and I can remove the points 0 and infinity from P1. So I have this sort of living inside of here. And then, so a standard thing in sort of cohomologies, like singular cohomologies, any sort of good behavior, well-behaved cohomology theories, you have sort of a sequence of cohomology of supports. So when you have sort of an open and an open subset and its closed complement. So you have the sequence of cohomology with supports. Which I'm just going to write down part of it. But so sort of you have H1 of P1 with let's say Z coefficients. So this is actually equal to 0. So P1 is just the complex P1, so just a Riemann sphere. So a sphere has no sort of one-dimensional cohomology. But anyway, so in the sequence, then it maps sort of by a restriction to the cohomology of this open subset, C star, C coefficients. And then sort of you go up a degree and land in sort of the cohomology of supports. I wonder, maybe I want to do a sequence going the other direction. I wanted to do the other, sorry, I'm not, I'm not great with sort of classical cohomology sequences. I wanted to do the sequence sort of where you go from let me abandon this example for now and I'll come back. I think sort of my point, let me sort of say sort of what my So the point I was going to make, but sort of now sort of I realized I would have had to make sort of a little bit more obliquely because it's going to sort of involve a duality as well. So the point I was going to make is that sort of H2 of P1 and H1 of C star, or these are the sort of the same motive. But to do that, what I really needed to do was sort of the sequence of comp. So okay, so now let me do that. So we do sort of the other sequence, so the sort of compactly supported cohomology sequence. So we have H1. P1. Let's draw this part. So we have H1 of P1. The compact supported cohomology of C star with C coefficients going to H2. Yeah, I'm going to screw it up again. I'm sorry. Here. I'll come back to this next time. Sorry about that. Okay. Let me sort of say sort of what you can see sort of from the thing I was going to write down. Motives are built out of sort of the cohomology of smooth projective varieties. So motives in general, sort of you can always sort of take something that's not smooth and projective and sort of relate its cohomology to something that is smooth and projective, sort of by a way that sort of transports the information between these different cohomology groups, sort of introduces sort of maybe some extensions between these things, but sort of in terms of sort of like what like the sort of the elemental building blocks are, sort of they're all coming from smooth projective varieties. So lots of times sort of we'll often restrict to these things. The extensions are interesting. Let me give you another example / exercise. So you can realize logarithms as sort of extensions of motives. That's sort of a nebulous statement, but sort of to make it not nebulous. So really sort of as extension sort of the motive of sort of Z, sort of the trivial, sort of like corresponding to sort of H0 of a point, and then the tape motive Z minus 1, so this corresponds to sort of H2 of P1. So you can look at sort of extensions of these. So here's sort of first exercise, sort of look up sort of the definition of a mixed Hodge structure. So I sort of said a little white lie earlier where I only looked at this filtration. There are actually sort of two filtrations you can look at in general, but for a smooth projective variety, sort of just boils down to one. If you look at a definition of a mixed Hodge structure, then you can sort of make this precise. And you can sort of realize it geometrically. By gluing two points together in C star. So if you take sort of the puncture complex plane, you glue two points together, it's not completely obvious, but you can sort of show this is sort of a nodal cubic curve with two punctures. So sort of this thing actually, which sort of, when I say glue things, two things together, that's sort of a topological construction, but sort of, this is actually sort of still living in the world of algebraic varieties. The point of this example slash exercise is just to say there's this whole world of sort of Hodge theory and sort of studying motives that's concerned mostly actually just with sort of what the sort of extension structure is between sort of these chunks that are built out of smooth projective varieties. This is a world I'm going to ignore for now. So I just want to look at sort of these elemental chunks coming from smooth projective things. You restate the Hodge structure, restate the Hodge conjecture. Sort of the map from sort of motives over C, so with rational coefficients. So saying over C, that means you're talking about algebraic varieties over the complex numbers, and saying you have rational coefficients, that's sort of like looking at sort of rational coefficients in cohomology theory to Hodge structures is fully faithful. So, what is this saying? And this is saying that so you're taking this sort of basic linearization. Like sort of the most primitive linearization of algebraic varieties you can do, sort of something that sort of any other reasonable linearization should factor through, and then sort of you're using this sort of very concrete linearization you already have, which is just taking sort of the cohomology and looking at sort of the Hodge structure on that cohomology, sort of the statement is sort of that. Like that's sort of embedding the category of motives inside the category of Hodge structures. Sort of the difference between the two is sort of not every Hodge structure sort of comes from a motive. I think roughly if you have no reason to not believe the Hodge conjecture is true, you should probably for now live your life as though the Hodge conjecture is true. At least sort of when you're trying to think, you should think like the Hodge conjecture is true, unless you have a very good reason not to. Let's assume this. Let me just say it's a difficult problem. Let me say it's an intractable problem of sort of fundamental importance to understand sort of exactly which sort of Hodge structures are motivic. So just saying they're motivic just means sort of they come from algebraic varieties. Sort of in some So in the Hodge conjecture, so which is one of these million-dollar problems, says that sort of you can realize sort of motives as a subcategory of Hodge structures. So sort of the Hodge structure really remembers sort of everything about this thing. But there are many more Hodge structures, sort of provably many more Hodge structures than sort of there are Hodge structures which live in the essential image. So sort of Hodge structures serve some simple to describe category, which there's a very difficult to describe category lives inside. Sort of conjecturally lives inside, but sort of saying exactly, like giving some concrete description, like you can't sort of use linear algebra to give a concrete description of a subcategory. Sort of you can't use linear algebra to give a concrete description of like which Hodge structures are motivic. And so sort of just an example sort of why this is sort of a fundamental importance and sort of in a whole sort of they're like whole mathematical worlds sort of have been born out of sort of fairly special cases of this problem. So for example, the theory of Shimura varieties. So these are sort of, this is sort of born out of sort of looking at sort of the one type of motivic Hodge structure that sort of can possibly vary in simple in a simple moduli space. So when you're trying to understand a problem like this, you're trying to understand sort of which of one thing is another thing. Like sort of the natural way to try and do this is sort of produce moduli spaces. So sort of break down sort of motivic Hodge structures into sort of different sort of spaces that you can understand. And sort of then understand each space at a time. But there's sort of some essential obstruction to this called Griffith's transversality, which is sort of about how the Hodge structures, like if you have a varying family of algebraic varieties, sort of it's about how the Hodge structures can vary in that family. And sort of essentially what Griffith's transversality tells you is that outside of sort of very simple types of Hodge structures, sort of if you sort of make a naive moduli space of Hodge structures, then sort of the subfamilies inside of there where everything is motivic, like they're not sort of, like this is the condition you place, this is like a non-integrable condition. So sort of you're not even sort of necessarily getting submanifolds. I think is sort of, maybe don't quote me on that, but I think this is sort of roughly the right way to think about it. In some very specific cases, you can sort of make them very modular. And that gives you the theory of Shimura varieties, which is like a huge theory in number theory. Sort of other areas as well. So that's sort of Hodge structures. Sort of making my way to p-adic Hodge theory. So sort of Hodge structures, sort of, this is something on the some enrichment of the cohomology of algebraic varieties of the complex numbers. It's supposed to fully capture sort of motives over the complex numbers. What if we look at sort of motives over other fields? So let's look at sort of varieties over Q. Over the rational numbers. These don't have like manifolds underlying them. And I guess they do have manifolds underlying if you take the complex points, but sort of that sort of factors through sort of base change to complex numbers already. So it's not sort of going to, if you take sort of that cohomology, it's not going to sort of be intrinsic. So it's not going to sort of remember anything intrinsic about being defined over the rational numbers. I'll come back to that maybe later. But it sort of turns out sort of or in fact, they're sort of our purely algebraically defined cohomology theories. So we're almost done for the day. So let me maybe just say a little bit, and then we'll pick up next time. There's the algebraic Durham cohomology. It's sort of a simple example, but not the most important right now. And so it turns out sort of you can define a Durham complex using sort of algebraic differential forms. And it's not, in general, sort of, it's not literally this complex that computes the cohomology. It's rather sort of, you get a complex of sheaves and you take the hypercohomology, if you know what that is. But in the end, sort of, this looks very, very close to sort of the manifold story. In particular, sort of, if you have sort of an affine algebraic variety, then you're actually literally sort of just taking the same sort of Durham complex with algebraic differential forms. This will sort of compute the right thing, it turns out. And then there's something called I'll call it L-adic Etal cohomology. So here L is a prime number. And sort of this is sort of gives you QL vector space. So this is the L-adic numbers. And this is something we'll come back to in much more detail later. One way to think about the L-adic numbers is sort of they're just a different completion of the rational numbers. So sort of the real numbers you get by sort of completing the rational numbers for like the standard Archimedean absolute value. But you can put sort of other absolute values, and sort of this is sort of one of the things you get by doing that. Another way to think of it, sort of maybe more concretely, is sort of this is just you take the limit of sort of z mod l to the n, and then you sort of invert l. So you sort of just take the inverse limit over the cyclic groups. Maybe another way to think about it, sort of, is sort of power series. So it's a meromorphic. What's the meromorphic? It's a Laurent series in sort of the variable L. So that's just, you can sort of express things like L inverse plus 1 plus 2 times L plus 7 times L squared. And so on. So you can sort of think of it as sort of being a power series in the variable L. And that's actually an extremely useful perspective that we'll sort of maybe use the most later on. But we don't need that perspective right now. So this is sort of something you can define it in purely. And purely sort of in the world of algebraic varieties, so you can sort of make sense of this over any field. We're not going to go into the definitions, but next time I think I'll talk about example. Let me just say two things. So first, sort of this has a action. So this is, it's a QL vector space, so it's a representation. So representation is just when you have a group acting on a vector space of the absolute value group of Q. So Q bar denotes an algebraic closure of Q. Absolute Galois group just means sort of you package together all the Galois groups of all the finite extensions into one sort of big thing. So you sort of, it's also sort of this limiting process. So this is sort of something called a profinite group. Sort of all its finite, it's just a group that has sort of all of its finite quotients or sort of the Galois groups of finite extensions of Q. So this is some group, and sort of it acts on this QL vector space. So this sort of you get a rep. This is really a representation. So what are two things I want to say about this before stopping? So over C, sort of algebraic Durham sort of canonically isomorphic to sort of analytic Durand cohomology, so the thing we were talking about before, and over and sort of L-adic Etal cohomology is canonically isomorphic to sort of singular cohomology with QL coefficients. So again, so you can sort of put any ring as your coefficients when you do singular cohomology, and so if you put QL as your ring of coefficients, you get sort of a canonical isomorphism. So over the complex numbers, you're not seeing anything new, but these are things sort of that are defined though over any field. Of course, over the complex number, you're already algebraically closed, so sort of this Galois action is sort of trivial, sort of just the trivial group acting. So here's a natural question. Let me state one thing, and then this something that looks like the Hodge conjecture. Sort of sending a sort of motive over Q to here with QL coefficients to its L-adic Etal cohomology. So this is sort of living in the category of representations, L-adic representations of this Galois group. This is fully faithful. So then, so if you believe this, which is again, this is a conjecture you should believe unless you have very explicit reason not to. And I'll tell you, I don't have explicit reason not to. So probably at least for the students here, that means you don't have explicit reason not to either. And so then the question is, which Galois representations sort of come from algebraic varieties? So come from motives. So this is just like asking which Hodge structures come from motives over C. So which Galois representations comes from motives over Q. So can you find, like, which Galois representations can you find inside of the Etal cohomology of an algebraic variety? And so this is sort of, we'll talk about this next time, but sort of this is where p-adic Hodge theory starts to show up. So unlike for the setting for motives over complex numbers, we actually sort of have a very precise expectation here. But to sort of formulate that precise expectation, you need p-adic Hodge theory. And this is sort of one of the things that sort of makes p-adic Hodge theory sort of an essential part of modern number theory. It's sort of that it's sort of used to formulate this question. This question, by the way, is sort of the precise statement is the Fontaine-Mazur conjecture. So specific instances, sort of motives are sort of also related to sort of automorphic forms, which are sort of these objects coming from harmonic analysis. So this is sort of the Langlands program studies, one of the things that Langlands program studies. And so specific instances of understanding this include Weyl's proof of Fermat's last theorem. So what Weyl's really proved is certain Galois representations sort of come. To prove Fermat's last theorem, what Weyl's really had to do was prove that certain Galois representations came from elliptic curves. So this is sort of a precise, if you can sort of use sort of Langlands program to sort of make more precise sort of expectations about where exactly you should look for variety, for motives giving you a Galois representation. So this conjecture, this question can be refined. But I'll stop there. And so next time, sort of, I'll next time I'm going to continue this introduction. So again, sort of next time is going to continue to be pitched at this sort of higher level. And so we'll talk about sort of where Piata College Theory is coming from in terms of this question, and then I'm sort of refine that a little bit, and sort of thinking about how this relates to sort of classical Hodge theory, to sort of set up our perspective for the rest of the class. But then sort of starting next week, we're going to go back to the basics and really sort of define the Piatic numbers and sort of go from there. I am going to stop the video, so I can figure out how.